going. You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 81, Ratatouille. With the dub bird, the Brad bird.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, Brad Bird, and everything in between. We're your hosts, Morgan Stradling, Chelsea Robson, and Mason Smith.
Today we are going to speak in French accents.
I didn't know Brad Bird was his own entity.
He's becoming it, I'm just saying. he hopped around from all the studios, but he is his own entity. It's like, this is a Pixar film and a Brad Bird film. And I know most people do that for movies anyway, but sometimes you forget about the director and you move on. But you cannot forget the director for this film.
Not when it's Brad Bird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And the fact that they did Iron Giant kind of gives him kind of like sort of an independent thing apart from Disney Pixar, you know?
Oh, the Iron Giant. Can we go review that again? I love that.
we should totally do like Revisited.
That would be cool. We could do it as a live stream or a Google Hangout. That would be a cool way to.
Oh, that would be a cool way to.
Watch with us. Coming soon on the Rotoscopers. Just be ready, guys. So for those of you who are new to the show, the Animation Addicts Podcast is a podcast devoted to our love of animated films, past and present. Each episode, we review a film, and currently we are in the midst of our Mice and Rats series, where the films that we are talking about either have one character that is a mice and or rat, or many characters. In this case, the movie that we are doing today is Ratatouille. There are many characters that are rats, and we are excited to get down and talk about them.
Yep, little mice. I can't do a little mouse noise.
Yes, shall we all try? Nope.
That's pretty good. That just sounds like one
That's
screaming.
That's a balloon coming out. Baymax.
That's pretty good. Squeaking.
If you have a good squeaker, guys, send us your voicemails. We'll play
send
it on our next
chat. Send us your best mice impression.
Amazing.
If we get like 100 people to do it, we could play it all at once.
That would be the best thing for the best of 2014 episode right there.
The time we like crowdsourced a giant rat impression noise.
Okay, so normally on the show, sometimes we do something called a nerdy couch discussion. It's basically what it sounds. It's a bunch of us pretending that we're chilling back on couches and just talking about random things that come to mind, as most people would do 2 a.m. And we've sort of had a Rotoscopers book club where sometimes we discuss different books. And what we've been wanting to do is discuss Ed Catmull's book, Creativity, Inc. This episode would be a perfect one to do it, and we kind of ran out of time. So we promise we're going to do it on a future episode. But be prepared. So if you still haven't read the book, please read the book and send us your thoughts and your reviews. And that way we can have all of your guys' thoughts and we can play your voicemails in our Nerdy Couch discussion that we will do in a future episode. So if you want to read the book, you can buy it at rotoscopers.com/creativityinc, or you can listen to it using our Audible link. You get one free book, so you can use your free book for Creativity, Inc. It's definitely one that you will be listening to again and again and again. That is at rotoscopers.com/audible. So get ready, and if you have voicemails, send them in at rotoscopers.com/voicemails. Now on to the show!
Yes, well, the French. I can't do a French accent at all. I'm not even going to try.
Good try, Chelsea.
I know. No, don't. The French already hate me, so whatever.
Just pretend like you're constantly smoking.
Well, I was going to say, like, don't hate me, French, but I'm like, oh, wait, the French hate everybody. They're French.
Excuse me.
Oh. I'm kidding.
I have
yesterday.
French, and they're amazing, and they're so nice, and they're so loving and kind, and they'll let you come into their house and stay for 6 months because they're just cool like that.
It's true. I have met your friends. They're cool.
They're so cool. The Gugnons.
I don't know Shout any French out. People. I don't even remember seeing France Rat when it first came out.
I do. Oh,
I do.
I remember because it was like, oh, the new Pixar film. I'm so excited to go see this. And I was living in New York, and we just happened to be, my cousin and I like ended up going to D.C., and we had nothing to do during for like a short No, I'm sure we could have found something to do, but I really wanted to see this movie because it was the new Pixar, and it was like, I have to see this movie. And so, yeah, I remember seeing it then.
I remember seeing the preview for it, you know, where it's just like the waiter and he's talking about cheese, you know, and you don't see his face, but the waiter is actually voiced by Brad Bird in that little preview teaser. And he like opens that one and there's Remy, and then there's this awesome scene of him running through the kitchen, and then the awesome freeze frame, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might have been like the beginning of those like Pixar movies where they just kind of teased it. They didn't really give away anything about the plot because that scene doesn't happen at all, and then the situation doesn't happen at all or even make sense in the actual movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, Cars sort of started the trend where the original Cars teaser was just Mater and Lightning McQueen driving on a road, and that's not in the original film,
yeah.
The final version of the film.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Try to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Well, yeah. I remember seeing the movie because, like Chelsea said, I think by this point in time, I mean, Pixar have been around 12 years. They definitely established themselves as the go-to movie studio. So anything the studio had put out, and still today, say, I feel it's basically the same. You were so excited. You didn't really care what it was about. You just knew Pixar made it. I gotta see it. And so I remember being so excited to see Ratatouille. And I just loved the concept, and I thought the marketing was so cute because it is this French word that if you didn't know how to read French very well, or at all, then you wouldn't know how to say it. But even on the posters, it showed how to say it. And I remember practicing like Ratatouille, Ratatouille. And now it's second nature to just see the word and say, oh yeah, Ratatouille. But at the time it was something new. And I remember that first teaser poster where it's Remy and there's all these knives and he's reaching for a piece of cheese, which that's not what the movie is about at all. Like Mason said with the original teaser, it's like they really tried to play off these stereotypes in the promotion. It's like Remy's never like chasing cheese in the movie, but whatever. I mean, you gotta put those, you know, classic elements into play so people can kind of set it up in their minds. Anyway, so I remember going and seeing this movie at an advanced screening. I remember looking in the newspaper and there was an advertisement for it saying, hey, there's an advanced screening on this day. It was a week before the movie came out, and I was like, oh, and I felt so cool that I, you know, you didn't have to do anything special. They were just doing all these advanced screenings. And so I just went and bought a ticket, and I think my sister was with me. And, and I just remember being so in love with this movie. I thought it was amazing. And the song Le Festin by Camille, I just remember downloading that song and listening to it over and over and over on my iPod. I thought it was the most amazing song in the world. And, I even had it as a ringtone at one point, but it was just so quiet. It wasn't a very effective ringtone, but that's how much I loved that song. Like, you know, in your iTunes playlist, when it tells you, you can sort by the number of times you played a song.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that would have been my top five because I listened to that song to death. I just thought it was amazing.
Holy cow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crazy.
I have no idea why, but I don't think I ever saw this in theaters, and I can't even remember the Pixar short that comes before it.
Shameful disgrace.
I know. A disgrace to the forces of evil.
Oh, Russell.
Yeah. And what else? Oh, so this was Pixar's eighth film, but it was the first one after the merger with Disney. So, you look at all the posters and it's like, Disney presents a Pixar film, produced and like distributed by Disney. But like, Disney really hit a jackpot with this one.
Yeah. So the budget for this film was $150 million and it made $623 million worldwide, which that is big. Just going and looking at, how well most films do. That's quite good.
So I heard its opener was really weak, but it eventually like gained a lot of traction. And in France, it was like, it was like the most successful animated film of all time shown in France.
Okay, so for Ratatouille, it's actually sort of the middle of Pixar's films. It made $623 million. The Incredibles was just right above it, $8 million more. And then we start going into Up and Monsters University and Finding Nemo, $700 million plus, and then a billion for Toy Story 3. But I mean, this, for its content and for what it is, you wouldn't think that it would be such a hit. I mean, this is above the original Toy Story. This is above Brave, above Cars 2, even above Cars, which is such a massive franchise. I think Cars has a little bit more longevity because of the toys. But Ratatouille, as just a work of art, did very well in the box office.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe this movie. It is a very artsy, like, work of art, mm-hmm. like Morgan said. And it's very different from other Pixar films. I mean, every Pixar film is kind of original in its own sense, but like, just think of the challenge that they had to like sell to the public. Okay. It's like a movie about a rat who wants to be a cook in Paris, but he needs this like kind of shiftless guy's, help to do it.
His body.
Yeah. While at the same, yeah, I'm good at appearing human. and together they kind of like, we kind of like live this weird life, and it's all about the like world of fine dining and like fine food, which the world isn't all that familiar with. I think when they did this film, they like tried to market, they tried to like do some promotions with like some, foods, but like no one would put a rat on their on their food boxes for Ratatouille,
I know there was an issue with, it was originally they did a promotion with Costco and they were supposed to release a wine, which totally makes sense. French or France wine, Ratatouille.
Oh, sweet. A Ratatouille version wine.
Yeah, but it was pulled because it had a cartoon character, which was like, promoting alcohol to children.
Right.
So, that's pretty understandable.
Good. Well, this, okay. I'm pretty sure Ratatouille is rated G, isn't it?
I don't know why it wouldn't be.
Well, I know why it wouldn't be. I mean, there's just more like a little bit more mature material than I think would normally be in a rated G film. Because there's the whole thing around Linguini being the illegitimate son of Gusteau.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a little aside about one of the cooks like having run away with messing around with the ringmaster's daughter when he was in the circus.
Oh dear.
It was like all kinds of stuff like that. And I'm like, I guess this did get a rated G. But it's cool because they managed to achieve like a rated G film and not have it be like, I don't know, Romeo and Juliet or Dougal or something like that. Something totally juvenile. And actually, I think there are more adults that like Ratatouille than there are like children, I mean, if a 10-year-old kid has their choice of Pixar movies, I don't think I'd know many that would say that Ratatouille was their first pick,
Yeah, which is why I love this concept, because it just, I mean, with everything being so commercial nowadays, it seems the artsy films or, especially for an animation studio, the more adult film would not be made. It'd be made by a smaller studio and more independent, maybe overseas. But the fact that this, kids, it does appeal to, but I don't see this as being someone's favorite film, like you said. But most adults that I talk to love this movie. And I think because it does hit those higher points and it's able to like tell the metaphor of, being an artist and being new in a field. And it just tells this wonderful story about, following your dreams, which is all basically summarized in the final speech or review that Anton gives at the end. But I think for those reasons, it appeals so much to adults. And to me still today is probably one of my top five animated films is Ratatouille. And it's good.
I don't remember being particularly impressed with it the first time I saw it, but then, that was like several years ago. And then I saw it again today to get ready for the episode and, very solid, from an animation standpoint, it's pretty masterful.
I will agree that it is entire, like, it's beautiful film. Like, as you're watching it, you're just like, wow, this is all really pretty. But, like, I'm feeling like I'm missing something, because I honestly never got, I guess I fall into that group of people that just never, like, was drawn to this. Maybe it's the fact that I'm kind of like Remy's dad, in the sense that I don't really, like, certain foods don't really make me all that happy. Like, it's kind of like in the goalposts, as my brother would put it. It's like, if it tastes good, it tastes good. It's like, well, okay. So I don't really.
Yeah. See, which I think is weird, because you, like, the film is about following your dreams, even though you don't necessarily look the part. And mm-hmm. not saying, and that's very much you, not saying you don't look the part.
No, yeah, yeah.
You very much do, but you're very much like a dreamer. You know, believe that you can, I love the line that he says is, Anton's like, not everyone can, you know, have greatness, but greatness can come from anywhere, basically. You know, and, yeah. and that's, I don't know. I see that as a philosophy that you believe in and are a proponent of. And so I'm just interested that it doesn't really captivate you.
Maybe it's just the fact that it's a rat.
Yeah. I know you have mentioned this in previous episodes. But Chelsea, be real. Like, this could be way worse. What if it were a cockroach who wanted to learn how to? Yeah.
Cockatooey.
Way worse. Cockatooey.
You're a roach. You'll always be a roach, and you can never be a cook.
Papa, why are we Irish cockroaches?
Oh my gosh. Maybe that's just it. I don't know. No, I totally agree with the philosophy of the greatness can come from anywhere. And it is, I do also agree of, like, you know, yeah, follow your dreams, find something that you want to do and do it. I guess you just have to put it in the right situation for me to really, like, take advantage of the plot. But man, I just can't get past the rat.
All right, well,
I'll admit that I didn't become like a food snob after watching this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't really do anything. It didn't really pique my interest in fine dining, like, from France, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still gonna go grab.
No.
Yeah, I don't think it was the point.
Ladies and gentlemen,
what are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
We are the real Brady Bros. Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter.
We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
I don't know. Well, I remember when I first saw it, I wasn't particularly impressed with it because, like, I didn't pick up on the technological achievements, but also, like, I don't know, I just kind of felt like the story was kind of like, okay, so it's like, a guy that shouldn't be at a place really wants to be at a place and fulfill his dreams and totally go against his nature, and everybody either needs to learn to accept him or whatever. So I was like, we've seen that before, but I don't know. I think what Ratatouille became, even though it's definitely one of the more, like, obscure Pixar films, in my opinion, like, I don't think a lot of people put it on their top five Pixar films. It's still, like, I don't know. I think it's just kind of one of those quintessential Pixar films, because it just had all the key ingredients. Like, it had the really fun writing, and it had, you know, it had the humor and stuff, I guess, and had kind of a wacky premise and creative ways of, like, visualizing things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we saw things in Ratatouille that I'd never seen in a animated film, and it was really cool.
So, talking about how this didn't spark your interest in food, I have actually a pretty funny story. So, after this movie, I became obsessed with the idea of trying Ratatouille.
I remember this.
Oh, you specifically wanted that dish?
Yes, I wanted to try.
No, she was so obsessed with this. It's like, I really want to try this. And, like,
Morgan
she was just going all over the place trying to find this.
Yeah, and so, you know, I couldn't find it anywhere. Apparently, I wasn't going to the right restaurants. Clearly didn't attempt to go to a French restaurant, because why would you do that?
You go but, to get ratatouille these days.
But our, well, you can actually get it at Disneyland now, but, so our French friends, a few months, basically a month or two later, they came and visited us, and they made us a meal one day, and before they were prepping the meal, and I was like, oh, do you know how to make ratatouille? And they said, oh yeah, of course, yeah, ratatouille, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, do you want some? And I'm like, yes. And so they showed me how to make ratatouille, and the type of ratatouille they made is not the kind that you see in the film. The kind you see in the film
the kind they made is a special kind.
Yeah, it's
where the vegetables are baked and not cooked in a pot.
Yes, and that's probably the key, because basically what you do is you get eggplant, you get tomatoes, you get a bunch of just various squashes and sort of things, and you cut them into little pieces, you stick them in a pot, and you let it simmer down to a mush, basically. Mm-hmm. And then you serve the mush, and it's called ratatouille, and it's horrible. Like, we were eating, and our whole family was there. And not even the French kids were eating the ratatouille. Like, they didn't even offer it to themselves. Like,
that's because ratatouille is like a provincial dish. It's like, hey, do you want some shepherd's pie, you know?
No. Shepherd's pie is delicious. Ratatouille is not.
Okay, well, it's like something you would eat out if you lived out in the boonies.
Yeah, but still, that type of food can be good. I don't think they were turning their nose up to it because it was like a peasant food. It was because I'm sure they were like, gross. No, thank you. So they didn't even serve themselves. The adults did, and everyone else got like, you know, serve themselves, but no one got seconds. And I felt really awkward because they made this huge vat and like, I couldn't even like get it down, but I had to give myself like a second and third helping because I was like, why did I do this to myself?
If you didn't love it, you wouldn't swallow.
Well, and also, yeah, because they had graciously prepared this meal and they kept asking like, oh, how do you like the ratatouille? I'm like, it's great. Oh, have some more, you know? And it was just, yeah, that was my one and only experience with ratatouille. And I need to find a good place or recipe to redeem it because I'm still interested in trying that version from the movie if it exists. But the real stuff, guys, don't fall for it.
Did you dress like Anton Ego?
I wish.
Did you gender swap it, Antoinette Ego? That's what you.
Oh my gosh, that's my new Halloween costume.
That's your new cosplay. Antoinette Ego. All right, so. Just some more general stuff, I guess, with production. This was originally conceived, like the concept of Ratatouille was conceived by Jan Pinkava, who is not a woman, and because men can be named Jan too. He was like a story artist, he was like an animator, and he came up with this idea, and then he was director. And I guess after only a few months, they said we need to bring in someone else, and so they brought in Brad Bird, and Brad Bird. Excellent, excellent director and writer and stuff. He made a few changes to the original script. So in the original version of Ratatouille, the character Gusteau wasn't dead. And also Skinner and Colette had smaller roles. And then a big thing that Brad Bird changed was distinguishing between Remy, who walks on his hind feet, and the rest of his rat clan, who all walk on their four paws. And then there's also originally a lot of the story took place in like the catacombs of Paris, which when I think of the Paris catacombs, I just visualize the creepy area where all the gypsies live in Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yes.
It's like filled with skulls and skeletons. You have to go through a graveyard to get into it. I know about France. And so we have kind of this, I don't know. It must have been a really I'd like to like research more about what exactly happens when a director has to take over for another director. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of heart-wrenching, to be honest. Like, cuz you don't really know what happened behind the scenes, but he didn't ultimately stay with Pixar. He left.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Jan, he ultimately left the company. And then it was quite awkward because he refused to comment on the film. You know, whenever he would be asked in an interview, he'd just say no comment, and he kind of never talked about it for, you know, a few years. And he ultimately, you know, was given not given the director's role anymore. So he undertook some other, you know, jobs and then left the company. So he's not, he is the co-director of the film technically. So while we all say, oh, this is Brad Bird's film, woohoo, it's really Brad Bird. It's sort of like the Don Bluth thing. I mean, usually Gary Goldman was in there as a co-director, but we kind of just oversee or ignore that.
It's like what happened with Brave.
I think people actually do consider Brenda Chapman to be, like, I feel like those two at least got credit, or they're considered mm-hmm. in the same vein. But with Jan, I think most people just have kind of disregarded him as being a co-director. But he left. He worked at Leica for a while, and now apparently he's working for Motorola Mobility, where he's come up with a new in-phone interactive animation genre. So there's that. So, yes, it's kind of awkward because this was his idea. Same thing with Brenda Chapman, which makes it even worse that, you know, they develop the script and it's their idea and then they get replaced, you know.
The first thing is that, you know, when you pitch an idea and they accept it, then it automatically becomes the property of that studio.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy to think about, because in the MS program at Texas A&M, they do a thing over the summer where they co-produce animated shorts with people from DreamWorks and also RealFX and I think Disney. And while the grad students do the majority of the work, everything is actually the property of DreamWorks in the end.
Nah.
So it's kind of weird. It's not like we can sell DVDs on it, you know? And so it's kind of like a weird little ownership thing. But yeah, I guess it was his idea until he signed it off as a production for Pixar, and then it became Pixar's. So, hey, fair's fair, I guess. So keep your good ideas to yourself. Keep your ideas to yourself unless you're absolutely sure they will keep you on as director.
Or just include that, I don't know, stipulation that if you try to replace me, I don't know, you probably can't
then
have that much power.
I'll tickle you. I don't know.
Wow, okay.
Your Adam's apple.
You went there.
You went there. Don't go there.
Yeah. So, Brad Bird. Brad Bird.
Brad
Bird.
Brad Bird. Brad Bird.
Brad.
That's like a Bill Brasky on
the
SNL.
Bears.
The Bears. The Bears.
The Brad. The Bird.
The Bird.
The Birdie. Yes. Bird. And then, so as soon as you start the movie, you begin the French snobbery, because, you see, it's kind of like that floating TV thing from Romeo plus Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one that the dude from Australia, Moulin Rouge. Okay. It's kind of a cool setup. Like, I don't know why I've been, maybe because I've been involved in an animated short film, but I'm learning more about animated story and how it works and how it all comes together. And I really like how they kind of set everything up, you know, because there's a lot to remember, because not only do you have Remy, who's the kind of the star of the show, you got Linguini, who's the human star of the show, and there are a ton of characters that you have to keep track of. And so the film, I think, does a terrific job of like setting everything up. So we start with Gusto, you know, and then you kind of see how amazing Gusto is and how great his character is. And then you're also introduced to Anton Ego, which is a great foreshadowing of like one of the big conflicts of the film, which is, will Gusto's restaurant, you know, survive Anton Ego's like review.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, do I love that guy. Anton Ego is just a great character.
Peter O'Toole.
I don't know. Maybe it's just the animation, but the animation reminds me of Hotel Transylvania.
It just reminds me of Dracula.
Don't spoil it. I'm halfway done with that movie.
You haven't watched Hotel Transylvania yet?
I own it, and I was watching it on Halloween, but I fell asleep.
As you always do.
As I always do. I mean, this is not a surprise.
Oh, my gosh. To me, just a side note, to me, falling asleep during a movie is a high crime.
Morgan should be hung.
Well, at least dragged out in the street or something. I don't know. I just never understood the concept of watching a movie to fall asleep.
I don't try to fall asleep.
Okay.
It's like after 9 o'clock, so fair game, you know. And I'm on a couch.
Hashtag nothing good can happen.
And I end up laying down, trying super hard to pay attention. And next thing I know, it's 2 hours later. I'm like, what? And the dog has chewed things and he's stolen things from me. And that literally happened 2 nights ago.
I had this ice pack.
And he stole the ice. And that's how I woke up because it was a brand new
Jimmy steal an ice pack?
I was using it.
he stole it right from under your nose.
Literally, he took it from my body where it was sitting. And I didn't know because I was asleep. And next thing I know, he's chewing it on the ground. I'm like, no, the worst.
You're so adorable, but it's horrible.
So anyway, sorry for that tangent. But...
No, it's a great tangent. But
are always welcome.
Let's rewind all the way through that. And I think we were talking about Anton Ego resembling Count Dracula. I think his shape language and stuff makes him look like a buzzard. You know,
yes, was actually modeled after a vulture.
Really? Oh, that makes sense.
And then if you notice, his office is shaped like a coffin. Like a coffin. Very literal in the, imagery.
I like him a lot. And I like him because he's one of those characters who is an antagonist but has a change of heart at the end. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just like that kind of stuff. And then, so all of that. And then we're kind of launched into the story of Remy in this big, long exposition about how he got to Paris. And it sets up a lot of the conflicts, you know. I like his tough New York, Brooklyn dad who's like, Remy, you'll always be a rat. You hear me? We need someone to sniff out the poison.
And
good.
Clean as a whistle. Close to heavenly.
Close to
godliness.
She's like, huh? You know, cleanliness is close to... never mind. I like Patton Oswalt. He's funny. Don't ever watch his stand-up. It's filthy. I've only watched like one routine of him, and I don't know. You can have your own thing and still be a voice actor for a kids show, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes I have a problem with that, though, you know? Because, like, okay, you're a stand-up comedian, you're doing voice for a rated G movie. It's not like a 7-year-old is going to, like, look you up.
Yeah.
You know? Because they probably like the characters. But, it's still kind of weird, you know?
I didn't start...
Like how they cast Jon Stewart as the bad guy for the movie Dougal. Which is fine. It totally fits because he's such a terrible person. Sorry. But he is. And but anyway, sometimes I have a problem with that. Like,
you know,
who they exactly cast.
I didn't start paying attention to like celebrities until I was about 11. I just remember when Titanic came out, people said, oh, Leonardo DiCaprio's in this and this person and this person. And I just remember thinking, who? Like I realized it was like a very definitive moment where I realized I have never paid attention to this stuff before and I'm out of the loop. Like I don't know who celebrities are.
Oh,
yeah, no. Exactly.
Being out of the loop is the worst.
So, the loop. You know, ever since then, I try to actively remember who people are, and now I'm quite good at it, I think. But, yeah, it was just kind of a moment of, like, I don't know who anybody is, and I never really cared before.
Well, you know what's crazy about Ratatouille is that in France Rat, like, there's a lot of voice actors who are, like, total surprises.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's one. Ian Holm is Skinner, so you know him as Bilbo Baggins from The Lord of the Rings. He's like an evil Bilbo.
Mm.
And then Gusteau himself is voiced by Brad Garrett. You know, the brother from That's So Raven. No, not That's So Raven. Everybody loves Raven.
That's So Raven, eh?
Everybody loves Raven. That's me. But they should do a crossover. And then Will Arnett voices... he voices a serious person for once. He voices Horst, the kind of German-ish head chef who has the freaky-looking head.
It was in the midst or towards the tail end of his Arrested Development days.
Michael, but where did the lighter fluid come from? It was an illusion.
And so that's very, like, non-Will Arnett, because nowadays when you cast Will Arnett in a role in a movie, it's you're getting Will Arnett. You're getting Job from Arrested Development.
Totally.
Literally. And then it was even hard to catch the John Ratzenberger character.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody had accents.
Yeah. It was cool.
Peter O'Toole as Anton Ego. I mean, he's been around forever. I don't particularly know his work very well, but...
I just appreciated this, which wasn't filled with A-listers, like... It just, it was just whoever was doing
Katy
the best.
Katy Perry as French lady.
You know, Pixar has done a good job at that though. Like they've never, I've never noticed at least where they've
Tom
focused
Hanks.
On, well, yeah, but.
John Goodman.
Yes.
Sorry, we don't mean to shut you down automatically.
But I'm saying.
But you're right, you're right. Like, compared to like
compared,
they
yeah. Can't. Compared to, you know, most other studios, like they capitalize on that the most. And I feel like.
Blue Sky
yes.
does a lot.
Mm-hmm. Blue Sky for sure.
Like Rio, that's all the advertising was. Is like, here's who's in the movie.
Tracy Morgan's the last film. Oh, that's sad. But yeah. Yeah, so I'm very impressed and pleased. And actually, the voice of Emil, his brother, was a story artist at Pixar. And Brad Bird just, like, I guess heard him talking one day and was like, you act and talk exactly like one of our characters. Would you like to be the voice for that?
That's awesome.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And then Brad Bird does one voice. I think he's, like, the secretary of Anton Ego.
I've always wondered in situations like that, does he get two checks?
How does that work?
Because, I mean, I just went and saw The Penguins of Madagascar. Funny, by the way. Just FYI.
I'd love to see that one, Private.
It was really funny. I legitimately liked it. But yeah, that's the director is the voice of
Skipper.
Skipper, yeah. I'm like, what's your names? The director's the voice of Skipper, and
well, he's always been
right. But like, that's one of those questions that I've always had. Like, do you get two paychecks? Because that would be cool.
Oh, I'll ask.
All about the money.
I'll ask.
I am.
Yeah. All right. Hey. Another side note on the animation, the movie is, like, super beautiful. Like, it's got so much color, you know? Like, they brought a city to life with like, color and lighting. And it's kind of funny because looking at it, like, having sort of a technical standpoint, like, the pre-Monsters University rendering and lighting, like, really shows to me. This was back when they did not do global illumination and ray tracing for an entire movie. So it's really hard to, like, there's not a lot of variation in the light. Like, there's no, like, total black shadow in the movie on the characters or anything. Whereas in Monsters University, they were able to get that entire spectrum. I don't know if that really has anything to do with global illumination and ray tracing, but even though the animation is just as beautiful as any other Pixar movie, highly advanced, I feel like the lighting and rendering was just one stage older than what we have now, you know? And it shows how far we've come in just, like, what, 9 years?
Yeah.
This is 2007, so, like, 7 years.
Do you feel the film looks dated? Like
Well on the one hand, the lighting and the rendering, yes, it feels a little dated, like, with the fur and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the technical achievements on this film are just astounding. Because, like, I was looking at it, and I was like, you know what? I wouldn't know the first thing about creating a CG pot of soup and modeling and, like, surfacing the soup texture as it's being stirred and then boiling it. And they had I think they had, like, first of all, the effects artists and the animators, and the people who built all the little objects in the movie, I think they all had to go to culinary camp or something like that. Like, they a few of them did apprenticeships with famous chefs, and they were just around food for, preparing for these, I guess, technical challenges.
That's one thing that's very difficult is lighting food and making food look appetizing.
So
they spent a lot of time, you know, bringing in food consultants, you know, when they developed, when Feast, the new Disney short, they did the same thing. They brought in experts because, you know, when you have a menu or a restaurant, I mean, we've all been there where we see, like, the hole in the wall place that just took photos of their own food and you're like, ugh. I guess I'll get a number 5. Like, I'm not excited to eat that, and then you go to, you know, a place that has a little bit more money and just the photos of the food, you know, you have to use white light and it just makes it look yummy. And there's just a way that you need to light food to make it look good. And that was a really important thing because that's such a central part of the film is food and fine food at that. And so I think it really shows because I think the food looks yummy. Like it looks like something that you would find at a 5-star restaurant, you know, with the little sprig on top and whatnot. And I'm interested. I'm interested in trying this, even the ratatouille, even though I'm skeptical.
Yeah. And one of the secrets of why, of how they made the food look so realistic and appetizing is a rendering technique called subsurface scattering. They, Pixar really got into it with The Incredibles. And that just means, you know how if you look at your arm right now, you have your first layer of skin, but you can also see other layers, down, almost down to like the blood veins and the muscles and stuff. And that's something that they achieved in The Incredibles, and they brought that in to Ratatouille as they discovered that, like, potatoes and, you know, vegetables have skin, and they have layers. Ogres have layers! Onions have layers! And so they brought that over as another kind of technical advancement in this film. And, but it just boggles my mind how intricate the movie is. Cause you gotta think of the set design for this film. And by the way, the set manager for this film, had a culinary degree. And so they knew about kitchens and stuff. And obviously with Pixar as a, in general, they always do their research, which is like rule number one for really good pre-production, which of course carries into your production. And so it's just I'm just blown away by all these sets, like these kitchens and all these objects, you know, dishes and, you know, little knickknacks and stuff that, you know, little details, but the objects that they made. I would have loved to have been like an intern at Pixar at the time and have like the assignment of like, well, you need to model like 50 different looking pots and they're going to be in this film, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I can just imagine it being something like that.
That'd be fun.
But there's really so much in the film. It's crazy. Despite it looking a little old, but at the same time, the animation is just beautiful. And then the cinematography. Did y'all notice that the cinematography was just like really, you know, real and very active?
Mm-hmm. Brad Bird.
The only thing that really showed age for me was just when it got like really close up on like the eyes or the face. Like,
oh, yeah.
But that was really the only thing that was really telling to me. But other than that, like, totally agree that this is just, it looks beautiful.
Yeah. All right. So Remy's having trouble because he doesn't really want to tell his family that he wants to be a cook and that he's sneaking into the old granny's house and learning how to cook and stuff. And you know, you read? and then there's this family. Does Remy's family appeal to you? Like, do they appeal to your own sensibilities?
I mean, like the dorky brother.
In what way?
I can kind of sympathize with the father.
I can totally sympathize with the father. I mean, except for the whole eating trash thing. I mean, I'm above that, but like,
that's just good to know.
I know. No, but the father, he's just kind of like,
do what's best for the family, kind of like the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to survive.
Put aside your dreams because we have a nation, basically this community to take care of, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I grew up like in a family business, and when you work in a family business, you work everything. Like, you are, whatever needs to get done, you just go and do it. And so, like, I can see that element in their community, where it's just like everybody kind of works together. So I get that.
Harmony. Yeah, he's kind of like, hey, we just got to survive, and like, we're so busy trying to survive that we really don't have time for like your weird hobbies, you know?
Yes, exactly.
But he's like, oh, wait a minute, one of your hobbies is useful for our survival, so hey, come over here, son. You know, this is my dad, who's never impressed.
So this movie actually has one of the, you know, the classic, which has kind of been made fun of in animation, like, this is me, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard this kind of Cartoon Brew? I'll include a link on it, but they kind of break down like this animation trope where like the character, we're introduced by like this, you know, narrator and he's just talking. And then there's like a moment where he says, this is me, you know, and this happens in where he's jumping out the window with the book.
Uh-huh.
And you don't know the context at the time.
It starts just like, this is Burke. We hate dragons.
Yep.
Maybe we should ride dragons instead of killing dragons. By the way, my name is Hiccup and nobody likes me. All right, so I can see how that's kind of a trope, you know. Also the whole, like, I don't know, there's a few, like, story tropes, you know. The old, you're a rat, you'll always be a rat, you're gonna be a chef, so you don't care about your family? You know, and then there's a couple of, you lied to me moments, you know. Here's another trope. Okay, so Remy gets in trouble. Granny pulls out her shotgun, and she never runs out of ammo until the plot demands it.
I knew you were going to say that.
Like, maybe I just need to get off my high horse, but, like, it's just yet another gross misrepresentation of how a firearm works. And maybe one of the reasons why people in Hollywood are... I know, well, it doesn't take a lot of brains to figure out that you can't fit nine or ten rounds into a pump shotgun. She's just going crazy with that thing. Also, she really does not. She's totally senile at this point. Poor French granny. But, like, maybe one of the reasons why people in Hollywood are so, like, anti-gun is because Hollywood doesn't understand guns. That you just can't grab a shotgun and pull off 10 rounds. Oh, well. I'll get off my high horse, but sometimes I watch, a TV episode where people are, like, shooting around with guns, and I'm like, okay, by now, they should have reloaded twice by now. I would like to be in the film business just so I can be the realistic depiction of a firearms consultant. I'm sure that's a popular job. Like, okay, so the ghost of Gusto kind of pops up, and he's like, hey, look around. And Gusto's going to switch through a lot of accents the more I talk in his voice. And I like the shots of Remy, like, scampering through the walls, you know? Because it's cool, because you have to, like, you can't really fit a camera in there. So one of the magic elements of animation is that you can fit a camera anywhere. And some people don't like that. Like, super cinematography people, they, like, think that an animated film needs to be filmed exactly as if there was a camera crew sitting there. But other people think that, hey, it's animation, we can do what we want and have all kinds of crazy camera angles. So I'm glad they went that route with this one.
I think that's kind of the point. Like, you have this world and you can get into spaces and niches that you wouldn't normally be able to. And if it gives us the ability to get a cool camera angle, let's do it. I think I'm all for it.
Yeah, yeah. And so shortly thereafter, he is introduced to Linguini. What do y'all think of Linguini?
He's such a dork, but he's awesome. He's clearly a fish out of water. He's taking this position basically because he needs a job. I need this job. I've been fired from so many.
I've lost so many.
You know, and you at that point, you feel for him. But yeah, this is not the place for him. And that's what kind of really they do a great job because Linguini should not be there, but he is because of who he is. He's a human and he's the son. And so that's why he's able to have this job, you know, as the garbage boy, basically, but he's in this, you know, amazing restaurant. And on the other hand, that's contrasted with Remy, who should be there, but he can't because of who he is. And so they kind of have to work together to use Linguini's strengths, which is, like you said, being human and having a body, and and Remy's abilities to create amazing, delectable food. I think it's cool. It's just a fun juxtaposition of the two characters who ultimately have to work together.
I like the scene where he's like, all right, I'm going to put you down now, but we got to work together on this thing. As soon as he puts him down, he runs away. I like it.
Well, my favorite
there's
quote
that cute little moment
them.
Where he comes back.
My favorite moment of all of them is like, you're the one who got fancy with the spices. I still quote that one, though.
What was that? What was that? Oregano? What was that? Rosemary? That's a spice, right? Mm-hmm. Then what was all that other stuff you put in there? Oh, that's like me cooking. That must be how it sounds like when I try to cook and when Shanna's looking, watching me. And then we kind of launch into what I think is kind of the silliest part of the film, but it still kind of works, is Remy's method of controlling Linguini. Like, can you, I can imagine.
Strangely involuntary.
This is strangely involuntary. I can imagine the dudes at Pixar at like a brain trust meeting, like, all right, Brad, everything looks really solid, except how do we get Remy to control what Linguini's doing?
Grab his hair, of course.
Grab his hair, of course. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a little silly.
Clever. I think it's kind of clever. I mean, what else were they going to do? Have him, like, whisper in his ear?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because
well, you can't, it can't
Remy
be a film
has
where
the instincts. Remy has the instincts, and he knows what to do. So there's really no other way for him to transpose that without actually just doing it. So I think it's kind of corny cute.
Yeah, and they do have this little cute little montage where they're like learning how to do it. He reaches for the knife and I'm like, don't do it, man, too early.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And so he gets his apprenticeship with the lovely Colette. Oui, oui.
He-he-he-ha-ha-ha.
I'm speaking to Cosette.
I love you very much.
So.
Yeah. And at the same time, I love how Linguini, he has this kind of rise to fame, you know, and at the same time, Skinner totally suspects him. And I love the little subplot of Skinner, like, perpetually going more and more crazy, trying to unmask the rat behind Linguini's success, you know? But then at the same time, when he's talking to his lawyer, he's like, he just wants me to think that it's the rat. He just wants me to get sucked up into his little game. He wants me to be crazy. Well, I'm not crazy. Should I be concerned about you? Like his lawyer. And so, like, the first half of the film, like, I like to kind of divide films into their, like, the midway point. And to me, the midway point is, like, right after Linguini just got super successful. Not necessarily when he found out he was the heir. Like, after he has that long night of being, like, interrogated by Skinner, and he's super... Okay, my favorite scene in the whole movie was where Remy put the sunglasses on him.
Oh, my gosh.
And Colette's trying to, like... She's like, I said good morning. He's just like, hey. And then
that,
I love the part where she's like...
The best where he just flops his head, just, like, hey, girl.
No, it's so great. She's like, so I heard you were there all night celebrating with Skinner. And he, like, flips his head over, and it just looks like he's saying, like, oh, really? Oh, you're so pathetic. It's so, I want to make a GIF of that. Ooh, I still have the rental. I can totally do that.
Awesome.
I just love that face so much. Whoever animated that was genius. And then, it only took, like, by a Pixar standpoint, it only took her a little while to fall in love with Linguini.
Yeah, pretty quick. I mean, like, I still don't understand how or why she fell in love with him, but that's okay.
He was different. He was everything that she wasn't.
Yes, she was very hard.
Also, I appreciate Colette's character. Like, people are talking like, oh, Frozen was so groundbreaking in that it had, like, typical female characters. Like, what? Pixar's been doing that since forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Colette's great because she's, like, she has her awesome speech about how she's the toughest, she has to be the toughest chef in the chef land. What do you call that thing where all the chefs are? The kitchen. And I cook sometimes. I cook sometimes. I know what a kitchen is.
I'll go see
that. That for now on. Hold on, we have to clean the chef land real quick. Yeah, so there's the chef land, and also her character design isn't like typical, like, giant eyeballs, typical Disney princess look, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's got character to her character design, you know? And I like it. I like when he's trying to explain things to Colette, and he's like, I have a secret. It's kind of disturbing. And she's, like, slowly reaching for her pepper spray. I have a tiny... So awkward. And then at the same time, it's like everything's kind of happening at once and setting up for the second act, where Skinner's, like, really the villain, you know? And all he wants to do is sell millions and millions of burritos.
Well, honestly, this is where my, like, capitalism comes out. I was like, I would be totally fine with the Chef Gusteau burrito. Like, I would buy that.
Ah, consumerism based off a dead person's legacy.
Hey, Chef, if they did it for, who's that guy? He has all these, like, sauces and his face is on every one of them, except he looks like...
Newman?
He's dressed up. You know exactly what... Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Newman's own.
Paul Newman. Gary Newman.
Oh, he has the best salad dressing.
They are very good, yeah.
Newman. And salsa.
Newman.
Okay, but that goes to charity.
Right, that goes to charity. So I doubt that Skinner was going to let the Gusteau microwavable stuff turn into... you know, go to charity. Also, like, his little shot at American culture, you know, oh, they're corn dogs. You get a cheap sausage, you smother it in batter and you deep fry it. It's American thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't just eat corn dogs. Cool. Hawaiian Haystacks, on the other hand, he can take as many shots as that as he wants.
Ooh, I love Hawaiian Haystacks.
Oh, come on, Chelsea.
This is why I don't belong on this episode.
I don't have a problem with Hawaiian Haystacks.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Hawaiian Haystacks are the worst.
For those who don't understand, explain the Hawaiian Haystack, because I don't know if that's a universal reference.
Well, you know how Utah is kind of the land of people who think that they're cool, but they're really not?
Oh my God.
Hawaiian Haystacks is one of those things. Yeah, just like Cafe Rio, BYU football. Sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
Just kidding. I love you, Utahns. But Hawaiian Haystacks is basically you get rice and you just put stuff on top of it. And I guarantee you that's not how the Hawaiians do it.
And yet, they're always first in line.
And yet, every potluck in Utah and every every lunch break at the BYU Telefund, where we call people and ask for donations. But anyway, yeah, every Hawaiian Haystacks is like this horrible dish.
It's
so simple to make.
Let me spice it up for you. So it's a bed of rice.
Get fancy with spices.
It's a bed of rice topped off with a delectable chicken sauce with chunks of delectable moist chicken drizzled all over the rice, sprinkled with Chinese, what are those things called? Like they're a...
all those little crunchy little wormy things.
It's like a crunchy noodle, a Chinese crunchy noodle. And with a little bit of chives and cheese... And you mix it all together, and it's just a paparazzi in your mouth. It's just so good. And it's amazing. I don't know. I'm just thinking of words, and that's not applicable. But, you know, you think of paparazzi. They're just all over the place.
It's like a party in my mouth, and everybody's invited.
Oh, brother. All right. End of Hawaiian Haystacks tangent / soapbox.
That happened.
And then I love this. Yeah, it totally did. Things are happening on this podcast. And I love how Skinner he gets booted out and he just goes crazy. Like, he devotes all of his time to busting Remy and Linguini. And I like the part where he's chasing after Remy because he has the piece of the will that basically transfers all of the Gusto's restaurant to Linguini. And I like that whole montage of him, like, chasing after Remy. And I love how Remy is so smart. He did the one thing that no one ever does when being chased by a huge object, you know? Skinner on his motorcycle, he actually ran off to the side instead of trying to outrun it.
He is
smart.
Such a smart rat.
He is a very smart rat. Wee wee. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he kind of get introduced to this thing where Linguini kind of gets a big head about it. And he does the dumbest thing. He's like, I don't need you anymore. You need to learn your place, you dumb rat. And he's like, okay, well, good luck cooking anything.
Take that.
One thing I like about Pixar is that it takes your typical ending apart and it kind of rearranges it. Because, like, at the very end, they're like, oh, kill the rat. And finally, Linguini's like, stop. Don't do it. For he is my tiny chef. He picks him up. He picks him up in the lighting. The lighting gets all, the lighting gets all, like, heartwarming and the music starts playing. And he's like, you know what? I never thought I could be anything until I met this guy, and he's the reason why we've gotten so great, and he's the reason why I'm rich, and why why Antonigo's here. And so, what do you say? You believed in me before, so how about we just pull this together and believe my tiny rat chef? And then the one chef just like shakes his head and gives him his smock and leaves. I love it. It's kind of like the Muppet movie where you're like, oh, they're going to pull it off and raise all the money, and then they actually didn't. Uh-huh. So one of those cool things.
We totally just talked, like, didn't even talk about the little chef. Just how that he refers to it as his little chef.
Hi, little chef.
Colette is like, what? Your little chef?
Call his name, he's little chef. Look, you're my inspiration.
But I love, so, you know, everyone leaves, and so they basically have to do it on their own. And
the rats,
like,
out of the goodness of their rat hearts.
Yeah, who'd have thought? But they definitely make sure, because of people like Chelsea who'd be watching the movie, they made sure that Remy shows himself washing his hands, but they go above and beyond. They just steam clean
the whole place.
Every rat.
The whole clan. Esteemed a rat. We all. Yeah. And then every scene with Antonigo is just great. You know, he's messing with the waiter, you know. I would like some fresh perspective. Can you suggest a good wine to go with it? He's like, fine. Since this restaurant seems to be all out of perspective, you just give me the food and I'll provide the perspective. He's like, oh, he's so evil. They made him wait a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, honestly, that would be knocking down on the points. Like, seriously, if this were made today, it would not be an Anton Ego who's the main protagonist. It would be Yelp. Yelp would be all over that, and then be like...
Oh, the main antagonist?
Yes.
The real villain in the story is Yelp?
Yes.
Ratings what? Hurt. No, Yelp is great.
I know, yes. But... It not,
but rivals use Yelp to, you know, put bad reviews on their rivals and their
competitors. Oh, see, that I don't like.
Messed up.
That's called cyber fraud.
We just prove that each their own, just prove it with the food and have the customers, yeah.
By the way, it was cooked by a rat. Yeah. And, speaking of getting your goose cooked, I like the part at the end where Skinner finally traps Remy in the cage. And I like the old trapped in a cage and giving up at the protagonist's lowest point, you know, very, very Toy Story, you know, or Woody's in the cage. Or I think it's, yeah, Woody's in the cage. And then Buzz is like, wait, I can be Buzz Lightyear. Anyway, I like how there's just the huge rat, the lab rat, you know, who's gotten all huge because of the experiments. Then he has that ear tag that has A113 on it for the trivia seeker. And I love how he can just push a gargoyle off of a building and make it land on a car and get the car trunk open.
He knows what's up.
They also capture Hogtie and imprison a health inspector and Skinner.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also it. I love how they just show the rats hauling him in to the pantry and Colette's watching the whole thing and she's just like, oh well, like goes back to what she was doing. I mean, what can you do by that point?
Nada.
Okay, and so I think the real magic of this film is when Anton Ego finally takes that fateful first bite of the Ratatouille.
Mm-hmm.
Everything after that is just pure, like, gold. I don't know why. Maybe because the movie, like, created this moment that was so powerful that it literally changed the heart of, like, a heartless person.
Mm-hmm. Gave him some perspective.
He gave him some perspective. And then there's that really interesting part where... they kind of laid it all out on the line and be like, okay, wait till closing. And it's been a rat the whole time, so please don't write a bad review, you know? And then they kind of have to wait for what he says. And that whole monologue that Anton Ego does where he talks about what he wrote in his review is just amazing.
Legendary.
Like, such good writing. Legendary status.
I'd say that is one of the top, you know, Pixar moments of all time. If you were going to pull out, whether it's emotional, just anything, just the whole spectrum, this moment, like people, this, you know, soliloquy that he does is amazing. And it's just, it sums everything up about the movie, but the fact that it's done from the voice of a critic just fits so well with, you know, the movie. It's not like a cheesy voiceover, just someone like, here's the moral of the story. It ties in with the movie so well, which is, I think, the reason why it is so effective.
Yeah. Because you're drawn into his transformation. You're drawn into Anton Ego's transformation, like, almost as much, if not more, than the other characters' transformations.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like he's redeemed from this, like, miserable, pessimistic person into someone who loves life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's okay with a rat preparing his food. Isn't that what life is all about?
No.
Yeah, and it goes along with that. It goes along with the theme that anyone can cook, or anyone can, you know, greatness can come from anyone.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else on the ending? Did you like the fact that they revealed Remy to Anton Ego? Or does it matter?
I think I do, because I think if he would have had been enshrouded in darkness and wouldn't have exposed who he really was, it could have, you know, I don't know if we'd have time to, but it could have ended badly. People don't appreciate when you keep secrets from them. And I think the fact that he was so confident in who he was, even though he'd worked really hard, it was a huge risk in that moment. He worked so hard to finally get there. The restaurant was being critically acclaimed by everyone. And it could have all just tumbled and he would have been living in the sewers the next day. But if people weren't ready to accept him. But I think I don't know. I just liked that he went that next step where he had to prove who he was. Not prove. He didn't have to prove anything, but he was willing to be that vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And it did end badly. The restaurant got shut down.
Oh, yeah.
But he came back up and he jumped back. He started his own. And people at that point were accepting, especially with Anton being the backer of the new restaurant, which really, you know, helped people kind of see through this prejudice they'd had towards rats, especially rats in a kitchen. That, I don't know, I liked it.
Do you think everybody knew in the end that the rats were the cooks?
I don't know.
Because he never explicitly stated that the cook that cooked him that dish was Remy.
Yeah, but I think in the end with the restaurant that's called, I don't think it was called Remy's, but I just feel that.
Called Ratatouille.
Yeah, that it.
And like the logo had like a rat with a wooden spoon.
Yeah, I think that was sort of just like a very not so subtle way to show that, okay, like it's obvious this is the chef, this is what it is, this is the experience you're getting into.
Yeah. I'd have to rewatch the ending to see if, because obviously Anton Ego knows it's Remy because he like, you know, the surprise me, you know, at the end, mm-hmm. But I don't know if any of the other people do. I wonder if Anton Ego.
I don't imagine you keep that a secret, especially with all the other you know, workers that would be there. But I don't know. I say.
Well, what if a health inspector decides to show up unannounced to that one?
That's a good point. Like, what the heck? Maybe they were.
I don't know. It's a mystery.
They were able to lobby and prove that rats are not dirty and they're not. It's not an infestation. Yeah.
It's a innovation. Have a rat infestation. Yeah. The end credits are really fun when they, you know, when everything's said and done. Mm-hmm. I don't think they even have show the. Do they show the title of the film until the end? You know how movies do that sometimes.
I don't know. I never paid attention to that.
Yeah, me neither. Maybe it's irrelevant. I like the end credits. You know, you got mice in the kitchen being crazy.
And it's 2D animated. It's so cute.
Yeah, isn't that great?
I love when they just
animation
throwback to the 2D or just a really quirky style that, yeah, it seems like a lot, like, Tangled did that.
Their end credits were great.
Big Hero 6's credits I wasn't, like, overwhelmed with. They were pretty low-key. But, yeah, I like it when it's kind of a little bit of 2D animation.
Well, I don't think Big Hero 6's credits were 2D animated. I think they were just either concept art to look like comic book pages like that.
It was more like an animatic sort of.
Yeah.
I liked Wreck-It Ralph's throwback.
You got a Wreck-It! Yeah, kind of like a retro look.
Uh-huh.
You know, arcade games were ambiguous. Just bit. yeah. So crappy sequel time, or crappy ripoff time. I don't know, this story just kind of makes me laugh. Apparently people made a big fuss about a movie called Ratatouille. It was a Brazilian-made animated film, and it's actually been mentioned by our listeners in the mailbag segment. And there's a link to it on YouTube if you dare. It is horrible. Like, it is horrible. It's like rendered on like Maya hardware. No, don't click on it.
You included the link.
Oh, I did, didn't I? You know, as an animator, as a budding like college animator, I'm pleased to know that I'm at least better than those guys. And if nobody in the U.S. will take me, maybe I can just move to Brazil and Chelsea can teach me Brazilian or whatever they speak down there. And I can be an animator in Brazil. I know they speak Portuguese.
I can help you. We can be a great team.
Together we can rule the galaxy. Anyway, apparently Veronica Taylor, a.k.a. Ash Ketchum, herself, does voices in Ratatouille. So it's not like in the English dub, at least. So it's not. I don't know, totally horrible? Like, was it at least available on Redbox? You can get pretty low and still be on Redbox. And, like, I watched some of it, and sure, the film is about, like, rats cooking, but it isn't a ripoff of Ratatouille.
You think?
Like, I wouldn't even compare the two. That would be giving Ratatouille way too much credit.
Well, it's sort of like that one movie that was, they changed their name to, like, Frozen Land or something.
Yeah.
And it wasn't anything to do with Frozen. It was just like
they just wanted name association.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of what this is. It just, they it's a similar-ish name. They knew it would get more exposure if they did that. And so here you go. And I, I love this YouTube video.
It comes with text commentary.
The notes says, Crapster piece of Ratatouille in full with Crapster commentary piece. Using text. Enjoy the horribleness.
Oh, it is terrible. It's so bad. It makes no sense. And to the credit of Pixar fans, like that specific studio, they're notorious for learning about a new film by Disney or Pixar or the big studios and guessing what the movie's going to be about and then making an animated movie about that and finishing it several years before the original Disney movie gets released.
Oh gosh.
So technically it's not a ripoff, but it's like a very, very jerk move, marketing move of being like, hey, it'd be like maybe a year from now people start making knockoff Polynesian themed movies.
No, not a year from now. Like right now.
Yeah, right now. We would have to see it right now. And so whatever, but it's so horrible, but the fans actually expected Pixar to file a lawsuit against these guys. I mean, come on.
They have their dignity.
Let them do their thing. Like that's giving you way too much credit.
Well, I mean, I kind of see this as something like, if we were to go ahead and do something, a mock something, it would be a mockery. It would. But it would be a mockery of ourselves.
I guess they're only hurting themselves by producing these films. But apparently people still pay money for them. I don't know why, when I could just animate the same thing, the same quality.
Why don't you start your own animation studio?
Okay, fine. Maybe I will.
Will you
voice one of those princesses like I said?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Hey, what about me?
Lady Gaga is going to be your singing voice, though.
What am I, Chopped Liver?
Perfect.
Chelsea, you don't have a deal with me, Chelsea.
I'm always get the short end of the stick in this relationship.
Hey, he and I have had a deal forever, and I really don't have to do anything. He just gets to use my likeness, and I get to go into a movie. And now I'm going to voice it. Excellent.
Chelsea, you can be my music specialist.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, so that's the story of Ratatouille. Maybe I'll watch it. I don't know. It looks like stuff I made in sophomore year in high school. But anyway.
Ooh, there's like a sassy girl who walks. Like a
that's Ash
mouse.
Ketchum, the blonde one.
No, she's got like red hair.
Oh, that might be the bad mouse. It's really hard to tell who's who.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, so what do you say we wrap this up?
Let's do it.
Let's put some garnish on it.
What's your general beef, no pun intended, get it, food? And then what do you rate Ratatouille? Ratapatootie.
I have no beef with this film. I love this film.
Oh, all
and
chicken, huh?
I'm giving Ratatouille 5 stars.
Holy cow, 5 stars.
Whoa, I didn't realize that would be so out of this world. I just really love this movie. Every time I watch it, I'm completely captivated in the plot. I love just how Pixar took this, you know, it's been done a million times before, France, you know, and it just made it so great. And we didn't even talk about the music, but Michael Giacchino's score is just so soothing and just comforting. And I think they did a really good job with the score. I love that it doesn't have, you know, well-known A-listers. You can just focus on the characters. I think the unique combo of Linguini and Remy with, you know, the two different antagonists, which is Skinner and then later Anton Ego, I think just really just the way the plot lays out is great. And one of my top, you know, animated films of all time, and it's no doubt because Brad Bird was involved.
Brad Bird.
Brad Bird. Brad Bird. Brad Bird.
All right. I'm going to give it 4 stars. 5 stars is such a big deal, though. Like, 5 stars is like Lion King. I gave Lion King 5 stars. I can't give Ratatouille 5 stars. But 4 stars is really good. Like, that's a superb animated film. And I don't know. I really enjoyed it. It reminds me a lot of Presto. Do you remember that short by Pixar? It kind of reminds me, and that was Andrew Stanton, not necessarily Brad Bird, but it kind of reminded me of that. It was physical humor without being slapstick. You know, it was action without being an action movie. And So I think Brad Bird just has this amazing talent for creating an exciting story. And revisiting the movie, it really is spectacular. It's beautiful, and it is a work of art. So 4 stars.
I'll give it 4 stars as well.
Ooh.
Like I said, I there's a lot of really good points in this movie, and I do like it. It's definitely not a 5-star for me, but it's got a lot of really great things. So I'll give it 4.
All right, so let's go into the mailbag.
All right, we got a plus size mailbag for y'all. First one is from Logan. Logan writes, "Hello, Rotoscopers. I am 12 years old, and I still like your podcasts." Aw, thanks for hanging in there, Logan.
Thrown out of our podcast.
You still like us? Wow. I mean, don't you think it's time to move on? Sorry, Logan. I think he meant
he's 12, and even at being 12, he loves the podcast. He's a young fan.
And still, I like your podcast. Hey, you have some young fans out there, too. We do. Infinite possibilities. Me, my dad, and my little brother all enjoy your podcasts, and I knew when you started your Rat series you were going to do Ratatouille. I love this film. It always makes me hungry, especially for that Ratatouille. I really need to find that recipe. Anyway, Ratatouille made a lot of money, so it would be natural to have some lower-class studios want that money. Uh-oh. I think I know what we're talking about. They think that if they make a film just like this one, it was a success, people would think that it is original film and buy it. The result is probably the worst film on the planet. A Brazilian studio named Video Brinquedo thought this was a great idea and made Here It Comes, Ratatouille. In my opinion, it is the worst animated film ever known to man.
I have to watch this in full now.
Yes, I provided a link, and we should spread the love and hate to everyone.
It'll be in the show notes.
He says the characters look really bad. Their mouths are out of sync. Well, that's because of the Brazilian dub, probably.
Probably.
Plus, their mouths look like a black void that will take you directly to the twilight. So, Logan, I like what you're writing so far.
That's amazing.
The story is really dumb. There are a bunch of rats that love Ratatouille's food and really want to know their secret. Well, don't give it away. The owner and only chef, Marcel Toing, tells the rats that the secret is care and devotion to their meals, which they think is fake. They are actually right. The secret, food sensing goggles that they use on Thursday nights to steal food from a human kitchen. That is a twist right there. Nice. And how's this for a really original plot? At the last kitchen raid, a deformed looking cat had to come out of nowhere and try to capture the rats. Is this the worst film on the planet? Most people say, precisely. That is an infamous quote from the movie spoken by Mike Pollock's character. I will show no mercy and give this film 0 out of 5 stars. Wow. What do you think? Video Brinquedo has also made really dumb spinoffs like The Little Cars, What's Up, and The Little Panda Fighter, and Gladiformers. Gladiformers sounds amazing. See if he could guess that what those spun off of. Before I finish, I also have requests for sometime later. Could you guys do Finding Nemo? This is my favorite film of all time. I would give it 5 out of 5 stars. See you real soon. Your biggest and probably youngest fan, Logan. Oh, Logan, you are a great fan. And thank you for writing that. Wow, a 12-year-old who likes Ratatouille that much. That's pretty cool.
He's
sharp as a tack, that Logan. And and about as far as Finding Nemo goes, we actually like have the show notes prepared to do a Finding Nemo episode.
It's true.
We just weren't able to do one, probably because it was around October, and instead of doing Finding Nemo, I threw a fit and made us do a Halloween episode.
It's true. Actually, we're gonna do it for Finding Nemo 3D.
Oh man! Well, since that time, I have seen the stage adaptation of Finding Nemo.
Oh, really?
At Disney World, yes. So I am prepared to talk about that. So maybe it's a good thing we held off.
Ooh, Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez, they wrote the music for that.
Yes, they did.
It's a great blue world.
I actually tried out for it.
Aww.
I'm okay that I didn't get it.
Carl. No, we just think it was cute. We're not, I mean, we are, okay, we do commiserate.
I was saying, because I knew you didn't, I had.
A-W-E. Oh. Georgia the Jungle.
Oh my gosh.
All right, our next one is from Old Reliable Joshua K. Woo! Hey, Rotoscopers, here are my thoughts on Pixar's Ratatouille. But first, here are the Easter eggs. The Pixar Planet truck is in the chase scene in the background. A113 is on a rat's ear. Bon Voyage from The Incredibles is a mime in one scene. And The Incredibles logo is on underwear. Doug Shadow is briefly seen in one scene as a sneak peek. And bonus, in the direct-to-video short film, Your Friend the Rat, Wally is seen driving a spaceship. Now for my actual thoughts on the film. This movie makes me hungry. Another hungry person. And maybe I want to try two different foods at once. Of course, if you have Pixar, you know the animation is going to be great. And it is. I also like the humor in the movie. It's like Rat and Patootie. Rat Patootie. There's not much to say, then this is just a great movie. Not my favorite, but still great. I give it 4.5 stars. Also, I have a question for you guys. Do you think you will do a Pixar short films episode on all the shorts so far? In case, I'm going to send you my thoughts on that soon. Anyway, I'm out. You guys rule. Joshua K.
Woo!
Yay!
Hey, we really should do a nerdy couch discussion on all the Pixar short films.
That would be a good fit for that discussion.
Yeah, that would. All right, this next one looks like a good one for me. This is from Tom. He says, hey guys, I've been listening to the podcast for over a year now and have never had the urge to write in. That was until I heard you were recording this podcast, and I had to tell you how much I love this film, even after initially hating it. The times I had seen this movie advertised made me feel ill. I really didn't like the look of rats, especially during the scene where they all fell in through the lady's house.
Oh, that's one of the best parts.
However, when I did sit down and watch Brad Bird's second Pixar flick, I loved it. The style of animation and voice acting, the feel of the Paris, and the way the film romanticized food as being a form of art was really fun and interesting. This year, as well as watching the film, I got to go to Disneyland Paris for the first time, where I went on the Ratatouille ride, which was equally amazing. Interesting, I didn't know they had a Ratatouille ride. If you ever get the chance to visit, I would really recommend it, as it was the best use of 3D I've ever seen. You could even smell the cheese. Or maybe that was the Bishop Cheese Remy restaurant next door. Anyway, can't wait to listen to this episode. Keep up the good work, Tom. Thanks, Tom. I really want to go to Disneyland Paris. I've heard it's, like, good but not good, but still cool. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I would love to go to Disneyland Paris. I bet the food is a lot better than the other parks. No offense, U.S. Disney parks, but, you know, unless you go to one of the nice restaurants, it's hard to find good food at the Disney parks.
I'm excited that it even got its own ride because, like, Cars, you know, Cars is such an obvious franchise to do a, you know, attraction for. But Ratatouille, it's kind of like this cult film now. Not really cult, but it has its following, but not, you don't see Ratatouille toys anywhere. You'd be lucky to find a Ratatouille shirt in the parks. But the fact that it was given its own, and I think obviously the only reason is because of the location in France. So
what's the rider like? They throw like knives at you and stuff.
I'm awesome. Guessing it's something to the effect. I mean, this is just me thinking probably like Soarin' and Go Over California. I mean, they could have done something akin to that because he said it's like has smells and everything.
Ooh, you should be an Imagineer.
Fancy.
I should be. I would be really good at that job.
This next one is from Drew. Drew says, hey, Rotoscopers, this is Drew. This is Drew. This is kind of jumping ahead a bit, but if you don't have a film scheduled for this year's Christmas special, one that should go in the lineup is Rankin Bass's Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Burgermeister, Meisterburger. This is a film I really enjoy, and I think you guys would have a great time reviewing this one. Thanks, Drew. P.S. This isn't animation related, but Star Wars is mentioned very regularly on the podcast, mostly by Mason.
What? I know. What?
Just out of curiosity, do each of you guys have a favorite episode? Ooh. Gosh, it's like choosing my favorite Pokemon. All right, I'm a huge fan of A New Hope.
Coughing. I just like saying their names.
Now we're talking about Pokemon. To answer your question, my favorite Pokemon is... I'm just kidding. I really like Episode 4, A New Hope, the original of originals. And I'm sorry, don't hate me, but I really like Episode 1. It is probably my... I can't say it's my second favorite because there's still Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, but I really like Episode 1. Take out Jar Jar, take out little boy Anakin, and I just had a blast watching that film, and I still do.
I don't necessarily know if I have a favorite episode, but I like the prequel trilogy. I'll just go out and say it. I think it's fine. <You know>? I know people bash on it as, like, the worst thing in the world. They pretended, like, it never should have been made, but I'm like, it's... great. Like, what's so bad?
Our download rates are dropping by the second.
I'm sorry. I mean, I know Hayden Christensen is a horrible actor, but I, you know what? It happened. Just be glad that the movies happened, right? I don't know. Anyway, I like Star Wars. I'm really excited for the trailer to come out on Friday. And by the time this episode comes out, the trailer will already be out for episode 7. So,
you know, are they going to do that thing where you have to go to a movie theater to watch the trailer in the previews?
I don't think so. That's messed up.
Yeah.
I'm looking for a leak here.
I actually really liked episode 6 the best.
Ooh, Return of the Jedi?
Mm-hmm. It's just, I think mostly it was just because when I first saw it, I was pretty young and I really liked the
Ewoks.
Was it the Ewoks? The little
bears? Yeah, the little teddy bear guys.
Yeah, I loved the Ewoks. I was like, this is why this is my favorite one. I'm very predictable.
Well, no. Ewoks are great.
Yeah, I liked them. And they got to live in, like, tree houses. And I just thought that was fantastic. So.
And toot little horns. Oh, right. They're so cute. Little bears. Yeah, we'll have to have a Star Wars day and do, like, the Clone Wars movie.
Les rêves des amoureux sont comme le bon vin. Ils donnent de la joie ou bien du chagrin. Affaibli par la faim, je suis malheureux. Pas longtemps chemin.
All right, thank you guys for coming in today. We're so glad to have you once again. We've had a lot of fun times over this Rats and Mice series, and we have even more fun times to come. Make sure.
Are
to
we
use...
done with the Rats
no,
series?
No, we have a couple more, because we still have Secret of Nim. We also are thinking about doing Rescuers, were we? Or maybe I'm just making that up.
We want to do Rescuers really and then Once Upon a Forest, because we have to do that movie,
yeah.
Apparently.
Well, it got such high votes that I'm like, man, our Rats series...
Okay, you know what? I bet there's just a consortium of
no.
Rose Cooper's fans who are just voting for these movies on purpose. Once Upon a Forest?
We can choose to override that and just do Cinderella,
like that was like
Secret
during
of Nim.
That was something you watched like during Recycling Earth Week, you know, when you were in elementary school.
Obviously, it's not going to be a very good episode.
We'll talk about all this off off air.
We'll
give you the updated schedule on the podcast side there. We need to debate this. Otherwise, because there's so many rap movies. There's The Rescuers, Once Upon a Forest, which kind of has a mouse.
Mason needs to be reprimanded for
Cinderella,
not liking environmentalist movies.
And Secret of Nim. So.
Hey, and Rescuers Down Under. So...
we got to fine tune because we don't want to be doing these mice forever.
Well, yeah, eventually we have to move on from the mice.
We got to let go.
All right. Anyway, so if you've made it to the end, basically always use the hashtag AnimAddicts when you're talking about the show. And if you're talking about a specific episode, just add the episode number at the end of that. So this would be AnimAddicts 81. For show notes, visit rotoscopers.com/81. You can also find links to rent the movie if you haven't seen it for a while. We can also be found on Hypable, Animated Views, and all of our iTunes and Stitcher Radio. I mean, these are some great places to be. If you do like the show, please subscribe on iTunes because that would help us a lot. Go to the show and also leave feedback and reviews on iTunes. We would really appreciate that. If you have anything that you want to get on the show, just send us an email at contact@rotoscopers.com and you can just put in the subject, what it's about. Also, we are doing the 2014 Best of episode. So if you have a voicemail that you want to be included, go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails or call in at 406-646-6575. If you've listened to at least one episode this year, send us a voicemail. Tell us your experience. We'd love to hear you guys. And if that's the case, then you're probably only listening to this episode. So, yeah, anyway. Check out our sponsors on Amazon. You can go to rotoscopers.com/Amazon or /Audible. Like Morgan mentioned up in the beginning of the show, we will be doing a Nerdy Couch discussion on one of my absolute favorite leadership and management books that I've read like this year. And that is Ed Catmull's Creativity, Inc. So check that out. Really, totally. It is 100% worth it. Also, we have the store. If you guys didn't listen in on the last episode, than you are going to listen in now. We still have t-shirts available. So if you want to head on over to rotoscopers.com/store, you are able to find them there. We might even have a couple signed shirts available too. What?
Yep. Signed shirts. They're going fast. So be sure to check them out at rotoscopers.com/store.
For all the best Disney quotes, head on over to disneyquotes.com.
Yes, I put my plug in there, okay? Those of you don't know, I have a website called DisneyQuotes.com and PixarQuotes.com because I love Disney and Pixar quotes. And so I'm at the end of each episode, I'm just going to put a little reference because if you go to DisneyQuotes.com and you click on Ratatouille, you can find all the amazing Ratatouille quotes that we didn't really get to go into. So go check out my site and support it. And if you have ideas for quotes that I'm missing, email me at contact@DisneyQuotes.com and let's get that fixed. So there's my plug. Thanks.
Nice plug. All right. Find us all in our individual locations. We're all on Twitter. Get on Twitter. But we're also all on Instagram. Check us out on Instagram. All of our handles are the same. Morgan Stradling, Chelsea Robson, R-O-B-S-O-N, Mason, Mason S-M-T-X. You can also check out his portfolio at masonsmithportfolio.com.
Aw, please do.
It's fun.
Cute. Poor guy. Tried so hard.
It's a bunch of ratapatootie.
Nice.
Just kidding. Mason is actually really talented. I love when he posts art on his Twitter and Instagram. And then obviously MasonSmithPortfolio.com is a great way to check out all his art. So please do it because he's a cool guy. And we want Mason to basically become the overlord of animation one day. So that's how you do it, basically.
Oh, it's big shoes.
The overlord.
I should put that. It says Mason Smith, animator, artist, and podcaster. Just put animation overlord. See how many callbacks I get. Hey, are you the overlord?
What?
That's me.
All right, guys. Until next time. We are the Rotoscopers.
Hold on, I'll be right back. I forgot I had something in the crock pot.
Ooh, speaking of cooking.
Oh, yeah, our master chef right here, crock pot master.
Let's all talk about what we've cooked today for Ratatouille.
Oh gosh, my plans were ramen.
Oh, man. I at least made a sandwich.
Yeah, I had a salad at work. And then yesterday I made steel cut oatmeal. That was
steel
good.
Cut oatmeal? Cool.
Today I drank
it with a steel sword.
I drank juice for breakfast. So I'm basically, I'm just a horrible eater. I'm so lazy.
Heard much? I would think you're so like into like working out and stuff, you would realize the benefits of a hearty breakfast.
Oh, I do. But today I just
you gotta fuel that fire.
This is green machine, green smoothie. It's
ooh, was it naked juice?
Yes, it was. So
green machine rules. I like
it's a little different. It wasn't just like a little like 8 ounce glass of orange juice. So
yeah,
I wanted to try it this morning because I need to get through it. I bought it and I haven't drank it in like a week. So I'm like, okay, how can I, get through this. So breakfast, I'm trying it out. It has all the goods that you need. So,
yeah, definitely. Yes. We got to fuel that fire for the rest of the day. You know, you got to stoke it.
Precisely.
That's me stoking the fire. Yeah. All right. Did you get fancy with the spices over there, Chels?
I did.
All right.
All good.